Okay, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 25th, 2023. All right, we're going to pick up right away with our scripture reading. We're in the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ. I have fed you with milk, and not with meat, for hitherto ye were not able to bear it, neither yet now are ye able, for ye are yet carnal. For whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal, and walk as men? For while one saith, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, are ye not carnal? Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers by whom ye believed, even as the Lord gave to every man? I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then, neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building. According to the grace of God which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seemeth to be wise in this world, let him become a fool, that he may be wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, He taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Therefore let no man glory in men. For all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or things present or things to come. All are yours. And ye are Christ's, and Christ is God's.
Okay. Do we have any questions or any announcements tonight, Terry?
Yeah, we got a few. Four is what I've got, and some of them are kind of long and hard, but I'll do my best if you'll allow me.
Okay. Maybe the long ones. If there's numerous questions, long ones, maybe you can break them up.
Okay. Dear NLA, I know that John is always looking for an opportunity to be interviewed. A great place for that is Red Pill 78. I will provide the link below. Zach, the host, has many well-known and notorious people on his show. He has both Friday and Saturday night live streams, which span about 2 hours or more in length. This is where he has guests on for interviews and call-in questions. So I'll just forward that to you. I guess that wasn't a question. Let's see. LaDonna says, I don't know if you're familiar with Live Truth Radio and Brian Lang. He is a patriot in the state of Ohio, and he has broadcasting Putting the Truth there for 16 years. He is also a member of the Allen County Committee of Safety here in Ohio. I was wondering if you might be interested in coming on his show. He broadcasts Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday nights, 7 to 9. I think it would be a great opportunity. So you're getting some recommendations.
right, well, anybody who has any contacts or something like that, they should just get that information at nationallibertyalliance.org and usually the connection and such things.
Okay.
Maybe those items you could talk to him about. But, I think
okay, I will.
I think he read the red pill last week. I don't know if he's made any contact with them or not.
Okay. Yeah, I might have. My mistake. My question is, this is from Marianne. My question is, has John seen this video yet? And it's a Rumble video about Scotty's playlist. The video includes a reference to Sovereign losing freedom of travel by having the right turned into a privilege. Is there any other way to win back our right other than the current process of challenging jurisdictions?
Well, even challenging jurisdictions. Hang on, I'm repeating myself. I'm coming through as I'm talking. Let's see if that's it.
I'll mute. Maybe that'll help.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it because I don't hear myself anymore. Okay, where were we on that? What was the question again? This was on challenging the jurisdiction potentially. How was that read? Potentially to try to... Terry, can you read that
part? I'm back down to it. It includes a video reference to Sovereign losing freedom of travel by having the right turned into a privilege. Is there any other way to win back our rights other than current process of challenging jurisdictions?
Yeah. Well, look, the sad truth is I've come to the conclusion we're not going to get any justice in court on any case that's worth anything worth hearing. I mean, you know, if there's a case that's in the court and nobody, you know, the status quo isn't being challenged or threatened, then those court cases will go through. Whether they get justice in those court cases or not is another question also. It may depend on who knows who, you know, kind of thing. Look, if they have shut the doors of justice, they've been shut for a long time. We've been trying to get through those doors for quite some time. They have these doorkeepers up there preventing anything, any case worth anything going in. I mean, we have hundreds of cases, literally, we've gone through the federal courts, and they've shut every one of them down. As time has gone on, you know, who knows what they've even done on the record. But again, you know, we didn't think that we'd really get in there to really get anything really solved on this side of devolution. We're really just building a case. So we've already built a case. We've got lots of evidence. We can prove that there's a conspiracy between the entire judiciary, and I've been trying to think on how we're going to go forward with our next papers on this. We haven't filed any papers in a while here. The entire judiciary is in on this whole thing. They're all guilty of treason, in my opinion, and I do truly believe that every one of them should hang. At worst case, of course, I think they should be tried and serve some kind of a sentence. But they've literally destroyed our entire justice system. The injuries are so great, trillions of dollars wouldn't even be able to pay the injuries that have been done by these people that have ruled over us in our courts. And this isn't just in the federal judiciary. This is also in all the state judiciaries also. We're focusing in on the federal, and we've been building evidence in on the federal. Although I do have a case going into New York, which we've had a few cases in New York, and we'll see how that one's going to go. Justice is no longer available in the United States, and I believe it's been that way for quite some time. And I think, you know, the Rules Enabling Act is the final blow to our justice system. At that point in time, once they put the rules out there, which I believe was 1948, was 1938.
And the rule was passed in 1934, and it was the rules, federal rules of civil procedure were made in 1938.
Right. And particularly Rule 60 and Rule 2. Rule 2 shut down our any kind of a common law procedure and process and replaced it with civil law. They've even really shut down our equity courts because they've combined it all together and called it civil law. So that was a major blow. They've done that by rule, and they hold that all the time. Rule 60 shuts down any of the free man's right to writs. So the writs have all been shut down. Now, we have filed many writs over time, but nowhere has any judge ever, you know, told us that they've been shut down. But this judge that I've been in court with recently, they made it clear that we don't have a right to a writ anymore. That's been done away with by the rules of the court, Rule 60. And so they have taken rules and made them law, and they've been ruling right from the bench. They've been ruling law right from the bench. And they quote each other. You know, their common law, what they call common law, is other court cases. And it's just one bad decision after another bad decision after another bad decision after another bad decision. And then they quote each other as if it's law, as if it means something, as if it bears some weight. So they have totally, the Bar Association, working with the bar members who are the most evil, which are the judges, because you don't become a judge unless you're tapped on the shoulder, hey, you can become a judge. So they make the approval on who becomes a judge. And you're not going to become a judge unless you're as evil as they are. That's my final decision, thinking on this. The other thing, I heard someone mention recently, and it really hit home for me in my thinking and realization of how serious the problem is. And something like 1 in every 100 people is a serious sociopath or psychopath. And sometimes you really can't, most people can't really see them because they don't necessarily reflect anything really that bad, but it's hidden inside them, I guess. But the point is this, I think, with psychology, they can find these people. And they could take all these psychopaths and all these sociopaths and place them in the high positions. And that's what they've been doing, I believe, for quite some time. And that's why you get these judges who are so bold in their evil, in my opinion, with the way they do things and they just throw you out of court. They shut down the system. They don't care about your rights. The Constitution doesn't exist. They hate America. And that's the bottom line. Certainly they can't love America if they're going to do what they did to our justice system. And so we're really not going to get anything done anywhere until we get onto the other side of devolution. So any paperwork that I'm writing right now and we're working on and thinking about and putting together is really going to be at a point in time to be filed when I feel maybe during devolution at some point in time might be the right time to file it or immediately after. But not the devil, you know, and who's going to know when devolution is finally over? Because it's a matter of really, seizing a lot of these people and bringing them to justice. And I've heard that that's happening right now in some places. But the big wigs, the real problems, who knows when that's going to happen and if it's going to be done in. You know. I know what was it? Q was talking about a 10-day time period, a time of darkness. Maybe that's when most of the bigwigs are really going to be arrested, potentially. I would presume anyway. I really don't know, of course. So anyway, it's a serious problem. If you've been injured by the government, if you've been injured by any major corporation. People are just wasting their time and money in the courts. Not that you shouldn't file the papers anyway, at least make a record and maintain that record, but don't expect any justice until you get to the other side. A few things have squeezed through over the years. We've seen some things squeeze through. I don't know how that happens, but it has. And I think the United States Supreme Court, I think they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And I think right now the one side is really putting a lot more pressure than the other side, and I think it's the good side, I think, because of some of the rulings that have been made over the past year and a half. You know, Roe versus Wade being turned over, overturned and turned back into the states, the First Amendment decision that was made over the summer, and a few other cases. So something is going on up there. Who would ever expect those things to happen? There was nothing even just on the horizon that we might see that something might happen. It just happened. I mean, it caught me totally off guard. And so that's a good thing. It's a good sign, of course. But yeah, the judiciary, they get a hold of you and they get jurisdiction over you, so they think they have. And no matter what you do, they just don't want to let go. They just want to bring their evil upon you. They want to just, trap you into whatever it is. And if you're bringing a case in, they're going to keep kicking your cases out. I don't even know how many cases I've filed and have been kicked out, never being heard. And this last case that we've been kicked out on, we're going after bonds and oaths, and we're also pursuing it to the appellate process, because when we filed our writ, that's when I found out that Rule 60 existed. And they told us that we didn't have a right of way anymore. That's been done away with. Who did it? Well, they did it. I mean, who's they? These people aren't even elected. But our courts are a mess, a total mess. So I guess that's what's next. Any other questions?
Hey, John, just to mention, I know you've said it hundreds of times, maybe even 1,000, but just because they say the rights are gone, they're not really gone. They just say they are. So the right to travel is still there. Also, sociopaths can hang as easily as anyone else. And so we can hang them by the neck until they're dead. Absolutely. Once at the end of due process, at the end, see them at the end of a rope, perhaps, depending upon the trial jury. And then also, I think I've mentioned this before, but people claim to be all about science and modern technology. But there is a simple way to pick out sociopaths, okay? And it's called the MRI machine, the magnetic resonance imaging machine. And you show anybody who wants to, this is what we should do in the future. We should make use of this. They're not hard to come by. Anyone that wants to be in government, anyone that wants to be a judge, they take a test, and it's a series of images, okay? For normal feeling people like you and me and everyone here, I'm sure, when we see these images, a certain part, neural structures in our brain will light up like a Christmas tree. But for the sociopath, those neural structures will not light up at all. It's called flat effect. Okay, and that's how you pick out a sociopath. And when that happens, you say, "Oh, well, you didn't pass the test. You can't be in government. You can't be a judge. You can't have anything to do with our government." And so, I just want to bring that up because this is something we need to implement, and it's quite simple to do. And I yield.
Well, that sounds like an interesting idea. It's something we have to think about and debate, and wonder if there are any dangers in that. The question becomes, if you start a test like that and it means something, what doors are we opening when we do something like that? So I think we'd have to think about that and really debate. There's a lot of things that are taking place that are even might be good, but there's no constitutional authority for it. And some of those things that we have to think about, do we want to continue with that? And this is a situation here, it sounds interesting, but we'd really have to think about that. It sounds like a great idea, though. I mean, if we're looking just at people who go into government to take that test, that's fine. The other side of the coin, though, to this thing, really, really the problem is the people have been trained to be lazy. The people have been trained to tweet, not think, not write, not read books. Just tweets. I mean, I go on to these places, for instance, Donald Trump, I was listening to, some speech he was given, and the site I was on, they had the chat open, the text chat. And one of the reasons we don't have a text chat open here is because we want people to be interested in focusing in on the conversation that's taking place. And these people that are in there, clearly they can't be paying attention to what really is going on. They get lost on a situation, and they get arguing and fighting and all kinds of crazy things. And all those chats and all those tweets, all those places where tweeting is going on, if you really step back and not involve yourself in it, you'll start to see that those chats are controlled by a lot of psychopaths. I mean, you know, a lot of people have a lot of things to say, but it also takes them away from what's going on. So it doesn't go anywhere. But people, we've been trained to be lazy. I think the last couple of generations, this generation's coming up right now, the ones that are in school right now, all these children, they're all destroyed. You know, I'm sure some will be salvaged back into society, and some will take a very long time to be salvaged into society, back into society, and some will never be able to be salvaged, to be brought back into any kind of a sane situation in society with all this woke thing and the confusion of things. You know, I heard, I'm trying to think where I heard this. This was from a CIA agent. Okay, he's retired. And he was talking about controlling and how they control people and how they look at people and how they figure out different types of people and so on and so forth. And he talks about psychology. And one of the things with psychology, you take a child up to age 7, they believe anything they're told. I think this was from a CIA. I'm pretty sure. But anyway, you take a child and up to about 7 years old, whatever you tell them, they believe 100%. They're true believers. You tell them the sky is pink when it's blue or whatever, they're going to believe it. They're going to believe everything you tell them. But then after a while, they come to the age of reason. So between 7 and 14 is when that age of reason is kicking in, and they're starting to get these thoughts about what you're saying. They're seeing the And so they start to see the contradictions that are brought up, or the things that were not true, or whatever the case may be. And then between the age of 14, 15, up until whatever, until maybe 18 or 20 or even further than that, now there's rebellion. Now there's like, that's why children don't listen to their parents. There's been too many contradictions, too many situations, too many lies. And that's the way it is. Now, think of the mind of children up to 7 years old alone that have been in school right now with this woke situation and all this demoralization. And I look at college students. You know, I've seen college students questioned outside their colleges, and they didn't even know who the first president is. They didn't know the difference between a Civil War and a Revolutionary War. They knew nothing about Thomas Jefferson. I mean, these people are complete morons. Now, it's not necessarily their fault, because they've been captured. We've all been captured, and they've been working on all of us for a very, very long time. And even when I was a kid, I look back and I can see they've been working on me too. We're all living in a fantasy, someone else's fantasy. Reality is not the way we think it is. It's the way that they produced it for us. Until we break away outside of that, I guess we'll call it a matrix. We break outside of that matrix. But even then, you still kind of figure, well, what's really true and what's not true? After a while, it's hard to even figure it out. But of course, truth is self-evident as time goes on. You can know truth to a certain degree. But when it comes to what's going on in the world and what the news has been giving us, and a lot of people, of course, have been turning away from the news, thankfully. But going back to the point I'm really trying to make, we've lost a lot of generations. I don't know how far forward, I guess we would say, that we've lost. I know the children in school today, but we have a lot of work to do to bring their brains back to where it should be. And again, a lot of them may be lost forever. Or a lot of them is going to take a long time to bring them back. A lot of problems have come up. But even going beyond that, of course, you know, like I said, even the college students and people, even at, you know, I guess up to about age 30 or 40, there's been a lot of damage, more damage done to those people than any of us before that. But again, just recently, it's in bad shape. So we got a major problem. We have a lot to work on, a lot to repair. And how do you repair that? You know, I'll tell you, one of the things I really believe we have to do, and I don't think people will do it because people are people and we are lazy to a certain degree. We've been all injured and being trained in certain ways. I don't think people are willing to give up them smartphones, because those smartphones make you stupid. And I'm dead serious about that. They're great if you use them for business or using them for a purpose to run an organization, because they really, it's a nice little computer that's in your hand that you can use and connect to your main computer on your desktop and do a lot of things. People are doing stupid things with it. And they're training themselves to talk in tweets. You can't have a conversation. I've had many a conversations over the years, you know, with people, and they say they just can't seem to hang in there for a couple of minutes just to hear the whole point. They got to break in with their tweet. And so the other side is never given a chance to bring out a point, to draw out a picture, and bring out an idea and a possibility with that could be at least considered. And people are not even, you know, again, we've been all beat up.
Hey, John?
And it's pretty bad. Yeah.
I think it's rather that we're using tweeting the wrong way. I think you have to use your creativity in that. Look, if everybody was tweeting out fundamental principles, when Samuel Clemens said, well, that's Mark Twain, he said, it ain't what you don't know that gets you, it's what you think you know that ain't so. If you tweeted that, if we tweeted on that level, that's instructive. Tweeting was never meant to be a novel or a book or anything to bring. If you could put little quips, and you know who used to do that? Our forefathers. Thomas Jefferson was great. Ben Franklin, oh my goodness. You know, he had a newspaper. He put little things down, little ditties, little poems. You can teach with that if you know how. And if you stick to the fundamental principles, you see, we have to get in there and start doing that. People are taught in the schools not to think. They didn't teach them how to think. They got outcome-based education. But if we went on and tweeted, if somebody's got something in there and it violates a fundamental principle and you put that fundamental principle in there as a tweet, I think it can be very instructive to go, oh, my God, I never thought of that.
I agree on that. That's a good point, and I do agree on that. The thing is that there's not many of us that would be doing those things. I mean, I don't tweet at all. I mean, so they're not going to get anything from me. I think I get all the quotes that I... Because I'm a person that just quote a lot of people. I quote our founding fathers. I quote the Bible. I mean, they have more to say than I do. And occasionally I might come up with a point. But the bottom line, though, is not many people are thinking that way. Look, right now... The worst thing we could ever do, it's like putting a gun in your child's hand. I truly believe this. And, you know, and I didn't realize this until recently. You know, all my children have the smartphones, and they've had them for quite some time. But they never got lost in a lot of the tweeting. They never got lost in a lot of stuff, thankfully. But the thing is, though, most of our children have. And when it comes to the children... I look to see what my nephew, you know, he's just a child that I've had a lot of opportunity to see growing up, from an outside view, you know, because he's someone else's child, he's not mine, he's my nephew. But nevertheless, I see what he's gone through, I see the things they talk about. And what children talk about and do to each other on these phones is just unbelievable. I don't know if people are paying attention. Our children are destroying children. And we've given them that weapon that is really injurious, that's injuring a lot of people. And the other thing is, as I've discovered, is again, the sociopaths and the psychopaths seem to really control the conversations. And besides that, there's so much to say about this thing. I mean, just recently I've been involved with a lot of phone calls that I had to make to the government and different agencies and medical systems and just a lot of different agencies and government agencies. And everybody wants an app. I mean, you know, they don't want to talk to you. And it takes you a long time to get someone on the phone because they're really pushing you, just pushing the whole herd to get you an app. And I don't even have a smartphone, and I'll never have a smartphone. I have computers, but I don't need a smartphone. But the bottom line is, you know, you think about all these apps and all these passwords and all these things you put into your phone and you're bombarded with all this stuff. You never talk to a human being. You're always talking to a machine. And it just goes on and on and on. And I think it's all insanity. Technology is great. I love technology. But there's a point where it becomes destructive, and it has gotten to that point. AI is the most destructive thing that ever could have been created. And every time you pick up a phone, you're talking to AI, you're dealing with AI. And it's very frustrating, because unless you're inside the loop, of their thinking of what they're going to converse with you about, you can't get any points across. You can't get anything done. You know, I have certain, take Skype, okay? You can't talk to an individual. They don't even have a phone number. They take my money, but I can't talk to someone. I have some problems, and I can't talk to anybody. And that's not the only business that's like that way, but they're all turning that way, every single one of them. I got this one phone call that I had made, and this is God's honest truth. I had one phone call, I'm trying to think which it was, but in any event, they came on and asked me, you know, if you want to talk in English or however they asked that, you know, press 1. So you press 1, but it continues on. And you hear someone talking in Spanish, and you're waiting for that person to get done. And after that's done, I hear someone talking in Chinese. And after that's done, I hear someone talking in Russian. And I did 8 languages, and I just hung up. About the 8th language, I just hung up. Now, I don't know if that's just some kind of a mistake or what, but to have to sit on the phone and listen to all that, and I think that's just another way to get you off and into their apps, in my opinion, because they always start off, well, you know, it's a lot easier, a lot of quicker way you could do things. Go up to www.whatever, download this app, or go onto the web and go to this page, and, you know, all this stuff. So maybe it's a frustrating thing, or maybe it was just an accident because whoever programmed the thing, you know, had all those languages in. But it kind of gives you a picture of the problem. And in my opinion, people are afraid to talk to people. People are literally, I don't know how many people I got to tell all the time, don't text me because I don't look at my text messages. Every once in a while, I see there's a whole bunch in there. I got to go clear them out because I do use that sometimes. You know, if you get stuck somewhere and you're trying to get a password or something, and they say, "Well, we'll send it to your phone and give you, you know, some kind of a number or something to put in," and then they get you in, you know, that kind of thing. Or occasionally you want to get an address or something, and someone's going to text it to you. I mean, I use it for about that. That's about it. But I don't do texts. But people just seem to be afraid to make that phone call and talk. And we're creating a society of timid people that will say horrible things on text that they would never say in person. So there's all kinds of psychological things, I think, here. Technology is going to destroy us. So that's where we're at. It's really a serious problem. And I really seriously believe a child should not have any of these smartphones or anything. And as a matter of fact, I don't think they should ever have a smartphone until they get on their own and go buy their own. Let them come up with their crazy $1,000 or $800 or whatever insanity people pay for those things. Then let them go out and get it. And if you train up a child on the way they should walk, they won't depart from it. That's a promise from God. So train them up right and give them the right information, the right tools. And then when they do get a smartphone, they use it for good purposes, we would imagine. But again, I think it's dangerous. I think it's damaging. But I think I went on too long on this. Unless you have something else to say, Gerard, or anyone else?
Yeah, I want to say the government is the worst one for AI. They don't program them right. When you push English, they're supposed to stop. They're not supposed to go through 50 other languages. The second you push English, you don't need to hear that list. But I noticed on the government websites, they almost enjoy doing it. Like they're saying, look at how inclusive we are. It wastes time. There's no doubt about it. It needs to be perfected. Why don't they perfect it? Because they can or because they don't want to? You know what I mean?
Well, again, they just want to destroy us.
The other thing is look at Donald Trump used tweeting to combat the fake news. When they went and did a big thing on him, lied, he'd get on there and he'd do a tweet. And it was 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 lines that blew them right out of the water. Nobody else would cover it, but when he tweeted, everybody read it. And so he used it as a weapon, and it worked very well for him.
Well, absolutely, and it's great that he did it that way, and he was able to do it that way. And
he's very intelligent.
But you know, the thing is that most people don't think that out enough, nor do they have the time or they have the message to really get out to do that.
You know, if you want to do a very insightful one-liners, you need to read like Ben Franklin. He had all kinds of them. And if you could tweet them out there, you could actually educate people. You could.
Well, I would agree on that. But again, my point would be that's not going to solve the problem. you know, again, you know, yeah, you'll get a few people's attention, and yeah, you'll get the people who have somewhat of a thinking mind left in them, which again, you know, school does not teach anybody how to think. You know, they teach them what to think, and that's it. And that's been going on since I was a kid. It's just gotten a lot worse.
Yeah, look, you know, we have ham radio that we can talk in codes, in 10 codes and stuff. And it's great, but it serves a purpose. You know, giving a six-year-old a smartphone is not very smart.
No, that's not at all.
You know what I mean? It can be abused, and you can't control it. You need parental controls. There's all kinds of sex and drugs and all kinds of crap and child abusers and
the other problem
traffickers and everything else on there. It's like taking your kid and throwing him in the middle of I don't know, what was the big street where they had all the 47...
It's like giving them a loaded gun, you know, to commit suicide ultimately.
And speaking of
children, too, with suicide, I hear that that is really on the rise.
It is big, yeah. Suicide, and people are being bullied into suicide, teenagers,
yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Government websites, speaking of, and ham radio, I've had reason to go for that reason of late to the FCC website. Have you seen this thing? It's from 1992. It's so pathetic. The FCC website, it's so utterly pathetic, it enrages me.
Which website is this?
FCC, the general government, for ham radio stuff. It is so utterly pathetic. What are they doing with the money? I mean, it's from 1992 at the latest. But the thing about the bullying, if we get back to our common law principles where you are responsible until you reach the age of maturity or majority, your parents are responsible, and either they'll answer for repairing and restoring the victim, or the child will. You know, I'm not saying we should bring dueling back, but if you ever read the ratification debates, you know certain people were talking to other people and they didn't like them, but they always refer to them with great respect, because if you didn't, one guy might say, well, you offended me, and I'm going to challenge you now to a duel, and one of the people is going to die in the next 5 minutes. Or the next day. You know, they might schedule it for the next day. Someone was going to be shot to death. And so in common law, you're responsible for everything you do and you say. That's not the way it is anymore, not to mention the devaluation of life with abortion and pornography. And so you put all this stuff together. If we get back to our common law principles where you are responsible for every single thing that you do and say, we won't have these problems. And if the children cause harm to other children, then their parents are going to have to pay, and that will get them back into shape. You see what I'm saying?
And you know what? It is that. It's supposed to be that way even now. When you have a child that uses the phone or the law or anything to damage somebody, their parent is definitely responsible.
Right, but they're not paying attention.
You can sue them. Listen, I had an incident where this girl made a false report and had the teacher report something to bring Child Protective Services at my door. And I didn't give them any leeway. And I said, who made the complaint? I said, I already know who made it, because my daughter came home. She knew you were going to come because the girl told her I reported you. Ha, 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 because she was mad at something my daughter said. So she weaponized the system. And they said, we can't tell you. I said, well, I'll tell you what. It was a false report, and you're not allowed to act on a false report. And I could prove it's a false report. I said, and so therefore, I'm going to make sure that the mother gets sued, that she gets charged for the daughter making a false report. And I said, and you guys, if you aid and abet it, then I'm going to sue you for aiding and abetting a false report. I'll tell you what, they ran away so fast. They, you know, people are weak. And we're not educated, and we don't know where to go. And these people are not used to push back, you know. And they said, I said, well, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to make this paper, and we're going to put it in a box. And if nothing happens in 6 months, then we'll rip it up. I said, you know what? You better not have a paper in there in a box with my name on it that says that I was accused of anything, because I've already proved to you that it's baloney. And I don't want to have anybody come in there and find out that you got this report. That's a false report, and if I find that out, Everybody that's responsible in that office or who should be responsible, including your bosses, are going to be pulled on the carpet because you can't do that. That's Amen. Not what that is designed for.
And this is common law, too. This is common law, too. This is biblical principle. When you, it says in the Bible, when you accuse someone falsely, what their penalty would be, you're going to have to suffer. So we need to get back to that, too.
Well, just I want to just make a note here that the Q&A is open if anybody wants to get into it.
And the other thing I was going to say is the reason there's so many suicides is because these kids don't even believe in a God. Never mind in God or whatever. They don't believe in it. They don't know why they're here, what their purposes are. Look, you take a good Christian kid that falls into drugs and they have a very bad trip and this and that. You know who saves them every time? I've talked to these kids. If it wasn't for their faith, the demon would have came and got them, and he would have convinced them to kill themselves because they despair and they can't.
Yeah, the question gets for the common person at this point in time is what faith? I mean, you know, we've seemed to have lost that too. Morality is just totally thrown out the window. I like I said, I've been watching my nephew grow up. He's 20 years old now. He's out of school. I've seen what he's gone through. I've been really watching. Even my children were homeschooled. But the thing is that the destruction is so deep and so lost. There is no morality. There's no control. There's no monitors. There's nothing. You put a weapon into these children's hands, and they're destroying each other. I remember when I was a child, you know, maybe something happened, and you get embarrassed about something, and a few people know, and, you know, whatever the case may be. And this happens to all of us now. But when you take a situation, when you put a picture in a situation or a problem onto a cell phone and you tweet it out and they tweet it out and everybody in the school knows and you become, you know, the joke of the school or whatever the case may be. I mean, this is how bad it really is. And I don't think parents are paying attention. And, you know, the problem is, well, look, generally speaking, the Bible tells us the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? I mean, we all, you have to restrain the ego inside yourself. You have to restrain, you know, that which is fleshly inside yourself. And people are not doing that because they're not even aware that they should be doing that or could be doing that, especially the kids growing up these days. But, you know, the only way, and again, to get the message out, you need 1 million people to get 1,000 people that'll do something. You got to get your message out to 1 million people, and it'll have 1,000 people step up and say, "Hey, that's a good idea. I should be doing that." And of course, that's what NLA is doing. You know, we're looking for that 1,000 people to step up and say, "Yeah, I'm going to do something." I see people complain. I it makes me sick sometimes. It really does, because I look at things here and I look at things there, and I see people they're all, you know, tweeting about this and about that, you know, and some video that's on, and, you know, you got all that conversation on the right side of the screen or whatever. But none of them will lift up a finger to do anything about the problem. None of them is capable of pushing themselves to say, "I need to get re-educated. I need to get some other kind of an education than what I've been given. I need to get involved. I need to step up. I need to take this back on the grassroots level." And but until we can achieve that, to get enough people on a grassroots level that really want to fix the problem and really want to get educated, and they get to that point and they start doing it, then we can make changes. Because, you know, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And so we don't need millions and millions of people. We need far less than 1 million. We need far less than 500,000 people nationwide in order to bring things back, to change things, to bring the law back in a proper way. You know, even with things going with devolution, we get to the other side. Well, who's there to plan really the common law, to bring that common law back? Who's going to do that? Because I'm not hearing anybody even talking about that's wearing the white hats up there. I'm not hearing anybody that even understands that we're a republic and who our founding fathers were or any of those things. So, again, that's our job. That's the people's job. But one person will never be listened to. But if you get 100 people in every county that's focused in on the problem and realize the solution, which is common law, which is return the king back into our courts, you know, you get 100 people in every county times 3,000 county, whatever number that works out, maybe someone could do the math on that. Well, that's all we need to take this nation back, because then at that, because then we become the people that require the law to be fixed and repaired. We're the ones that require proper legislation and to get rid of improper legislation. We're the people pulling people out of office and saying, you know, because this person's breaking their oath and they're not doing their job. See, at that point, it doesn't matter if you have a psychopath up there or a sociopath or whatever. And I guess they're both the same, maybe. I don't know. I've been told that they were. But in any event, you know, it doesn't matter if they're in office, because you can bring them under control to be focusing in on the right thing, because, you know, again, all they're interested is in the power. And if you take the money away, at least that's not there anymore. I mean, these people go into office, they come out multi-millionaires, you know. But in any, and where do they, you know, what's that all about? But in any event, you know, the people can change it. We got to get enough people involved to do that. And but, you know, it gets back to morality, it gets back to our schools. What about the children that have grown up in this system and are continuing to be grown up in this system, and they have their children, you know? Things would be seven times worse, the Bible tells us.
We just got to ban them from running from office, John. That's all. They're not allowed to participate.
MRI, what do you call it? MRI test, and we're gonna find out who they are. Eric, right?
years ago, there were consequences. You see, there could be consequences today, but nobody wants to do it. You know, you say somebody puts something out there, false about somebody, and it goes out. Well, you could have done that years ago. You could put something in the newspaper that was false, and everybody would read it. And guess what? That was called libel, right?
Yeah, right.
And you get sued. And not only did you get sued, the newspaper that printed it can get sued.
Absolutely. Look, when I was a kid, I remember, you know, the corrupting the morals of a minor was a crime. Okay?
They used it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
it was popular today, when I was growing up. The whole concept could not do it.
You ride your bikes naked and in front of children and teach them all kinds of this woke craziness.
I'd fix that in a hurry. I'd just give them all BB guns and tell them to aim for the private parts.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant
idea.
Well,
one other thing about this woke stuff, and they move so quickly. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe how fast these people move. I've been involved with a lot of phone calls lately with government agencies and different agencies and medical agencies and filling out paperwork for different things. You know, you help a lot of people out doing some things, and already on all this paperwork, I mean, it's so fast. They have the question on your sex. They have male, female, other. What do you want to be called? I mean, this is crazy.
That's because it was planned, John.
Well, yes.
It was planned, and it was pre-thought out, and those papers were pre-printed years ago. This is a plan. Just like they say, oh, trust the plan. Well, they got their plan, and they trust their plan.
Yeah. By the way, the queue is open if anybody wants to get into it.
Your number, by the way, John, your number is less than 500,000 for 100 for every county. If they're, so there's 3,100 counties, so let's just say it's 300,000 people plus. It's not much more than that.
But that's all we need to save this nation. Okay, that's all we need. We need to find 300,000 people. And I'll tell you what, you find 300,000 people, you're going to double that quickly, because, you know, once you start to deal with the school problems and you wake the parents up that are around at this point, especially the grandparents who have a little more experience and a little more wisdom, hopefully. I mean, wisdom is something that doesn't, I don't see it that often anymore. You know, I have nothing really to really, you know, measure that by anyway. But the thing is that, you know, we need to fix this problem. And so the people have to get up and fix this problem. Nobody else is going to fix this problem. So government can't do it. And, you know, we can give, you know, Trump and the White Hats the necessary, you know, leeway to do what they got to do to fix it. But then what? Then what? What happens then? We'll be back here again. It's only a matter of time. All right, any more questions left here, Terry? Or did we put you to sleep?
Yes. Let me get back to that.
But again, the queue is open if anybody wants in.
Okay, John talks a lot about after devolution. I'm optimistic about it, but still wanted some assurance. Would a many things be addressed and either rescinded, repealed, or disbanded after its conclusion? That's the first question.
Say the last part of that. Will anything what?
Would anything or many things be addressed and either rescinded, repealed, or disbanded after its conclusion, after the conclusion of devolution?
Well, that's an interesting question, and, you know, look at, there are a lot of things going to change. You know, we have GR working on Republic Review, but he's not the only one that's got that kind of thinking in mind. You know, we've heard things from people in the know, or at least we think they're in the know anyway, and talking about different things. For instance, like, and this makes sense, I mean, with the stroke of one pen, one signature on one piece of paper, everything that's been done by these insane people can be overturned in one day because everything they've done is unlawful. And just the fact that they're really, like, for instance, Biden being the president of the United States, Inc., and not the United States of America, just that fact alone, again, one paper overturns everything. We don't have to go back and try to fix every little detail. But in theory, and I think this is what we need to do and think about, in theory, we need to get rid of all legislation going all the way back, and then we'll just have to work it out from there and figure it out. It would be a much safer situation. Look, we're always in a better place when Congress is not making law, because as long as they're making law, we have more problems and more situations. So in theory, maybe we can need to push for that. Maybe that's a paper we need to file in the court. My thinking at this point, and again, you know, we roll with the punches, so to speak. You know, we have a plan, but it has to change from time to time on how we're focusing, where we're heading, and what we're doing, because we discover that certain things are in ways that we didn't realize. Like, whoever thought that the courts were this corrupt? I mean, look, as we're going through the whole system, we see how corrupt, but we always have a little hope and say, we're going to meet that one judge. We're going to get to that one point where we can get in and get our point up and get a jury and get something done. But reality now is just so obvious that's not going to happen on this side of devolution. So we have to wait till we get to the other side. But my paperwork that I want to do is I want to sue the entire federal judiciary, every single judge in there, a lawsuit against the federal judiciary, and also the Bar Association. They're guilty of treason. They're the ones that put the papers out. They've been producing the minions of the New World Order in order to destroy the United States of America. That's what they've been doing. They've been doing this since 1750. Before we even became the United States of America, the Bar Association was here in the colonies for the sole purpose of destroying our judicial process, of destroying the common law that we were under. But yeah, we have to bring the common law back, and I'm going to be working on taking all the paperwork that I've been working on over the years, and particularly the last paperwork, which we've made 18, 19 points, and I think we can throw in a couple of more points and turn that around directly as a lawsuit and making the point on how they destroyed our judicial system. And of course, it'll be a trial by jury. But we're not going to be able to get into the courts with a case like that on this side of devolution. It's just not going to happen. And like I said, in the middle of people being arrested and different things going on, maybe that'll be the time when we try to get in. Or maybe we have to wait until some of the dust settles. But I'm going to start working on that paperwork now in preparation for that point. But until then, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, justice in America, the Constitution doesn't exist. There is no bill. Now, everything is still there. Don't get me wrong. You know, the structure of who we are as a people, the republic, is still there in paper, in writing, in position. It's the people that have taken control and all this horrible legislation that they've had on top of it and the way the courts operate. You know, that's what's destructive. So we can pick things up quite quickly and bring it back. But as far as the reality of today, where we are as a people, where we are in this whole crazy mixed up world, there is no Bill of Rights. There is no Constitution. There is no, common law. There is no justice. It's all just chaos. So anyway, that's where we're at. Anybody want to add anything to that before we move on to another subject?
One quick thing, speaking of GR and First Amendment petition, and you're talking about Congress, whenever they're writing stuff, it's always to our detriment. Well, GR sent me something called A Short History of the Right to Petition the Government for the Redress of Grievances from the 1986 Yale Law Journal. Mm-hmm. And the gist of this is that instead of just making up things that suit them and the lobbyists, the things that they wrote came from the educated people because they were busy attending to all of the things that the people were sending to them. And so that's what they wrote their legislation from, was from these petitions. Now, this ended a long time ago, but that's how it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think any legislation after 1871 needs to be reconsidered. It needs to be just shut off and reconsider whatever is there to bring back in, and then pick it up from there.
Amen.
I don't know if any other way to do it, because that's when all the destruction, as far as I can see, as far as legislation is concerned, is really, really started. But it may have started before that too. You know, look at what people don't realize is who the Democratic Party really is. The Democratic Party is anti-constitutional and anti-American. They've been working for the banksters forever, since its inception and before its inception. Because before they were the Democratic Party, they were the Federalists. And the Federalists were ultimately backed and pushed and focused in by the slave owners and by the banksters. And Britain, of course, was behind all that, but they were behind the banksters anyway. But all that was taking place since 1750. When the debates started to take place to create this, the United States of America, they came together in the Federalist. And in 1803 or 1801, I think it was 1803, they morphed into the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party is the ones that have kept the black and the white thing going. They're the ones that were all for slavery. They were the ones that have been destructive, as far as race concerns are between the people. They're all the one guilty for that. And yet most of the black people, a lot of the black people were Democrats, but I think their eyes are opening now. I'm seeing a big movement, lots of movements everywhere, where these people are stepping up and realizing, I've been duped all this time. They're the ones that's been keeping me on the reservation or whatever you want to call it, the plantation or whatever you want to call it. They're the ones that's been doing that. And it's the Republicans, and again, we have a lot of enemies in the Republican Party. We've got a lot of rhinos here. But it's the Republican Party that really has been always for the freedom of the slaves going all the way back. How many people realize that Jefferson spent his entire life trying to get rid of slavery? Nobody talks about that. Our founding fathers abhorred slavery. They didn't want no part of it. They were all born into it. We didn't create slavery. That's what Britain did, and they brought it in to the colonies. And so when America was being created, the problem was already here. And our founding fathers tried to get rid of it. We have Lincoln, who made the point that the founding fathers set the stage and made it possible for him to make that move that he made. And the Civil War was about slavery. That was the major point of the Civil War and the reason behind it. And, of course, the lies get in there about Jefferson and about the real purpose of the Civil War and about many, many other things. But anything from 1871, after the rules, not the rules, after the Organic Act of 1871, at least from that point, all legislation is questionable. I think it needs to be just eliminated and reconsidered, some of the things, let people come up and discuss it. So,
well, don't you think that's part of the plan of devolution? Because
I think it might be. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's logical because there's too much crazy legislation, and getting the courts. You know, the problem. My concern is how many people really understand how a common law court should be. I'm amazed that I don't hear anybody on the upper level talking about this. And the conversations I hear people have, the intellectuals, the people who are involved, the people who do understand a lot of things, and this part of their conversation doesn't exist. They seem not to know anything about it.
I don't ever hear them talking about it, not ever. And it makes me a little nervous because I think the people advising them are all bar trained, and all their consciences are seared.
Absolutely.
Well, look, we're still getting some good rulings. That judge in California that just ruled on the magazine ban.
But that's not because they understand the common law, though. But go ahead.
He just ruled on the magazine ban, and he said, "Listen," he said, "the Second Amendment, the government was never meant to limit it to the amount of bullets. That was the person that was carrying the gun's discretion of what kind of firepower they needed to protect themselves. That is not the government's purvey." I mean, tell me this guy doesn't know about common law. He's bringing it back to what it should be. And he said, and he declared their magazine numbers ban unconstitutional. And so in New York, They shot down the gun control law here, and so what happened? Hochul put up one that's even worse than the one that they shot down because she knew it would take them like 4 years to go back in and declare that one unconstitutional. You know, she made it worse than the original, and nobody did anything. Now this ruling that this judge says that the California magazine ban, you know, the numbers is unconstitutional. Guess what? We're missing out because we should go out in the street right now, all of us, with 30 shot magazines and march down in Manhattan and dare them to arrest us and say, "Look, it, we know that it's unconstitutional for you guys to enforce it, because if it's unconstitutional in California, it's unconstitutional in New York." And we should have hundreds of people and lawyers and everybody saying, "Go ahead." You know what I mean? But we don't have that. But that's what needs to happen. And then there was another ruling. Let me finish. Where they said that all these agencies, these ABC agencies, have no authority, that they are administrative, which means the IRS, the EPA, all of them, basically, they pulled the rug out from them last year. So how come we're not out there suing them and challenging them in the courts? Oh, because I don't want to be the one that they come after, right?
Well, to some degree. Level the problem is again, they don't allow the court case to actually mature to the point that we actually have a hearing and get due process. That's the problem. But hey, we can solve the problems if we get enough people involved and get serious. The other problem we have, and again, we don't have enough volunteers. We just don't have enough people stepping up, even here inside National Liberty Lines, to do the things that have to be done. There's so many things undone that we just don't have enough help to be able to do it. And, you know, we haven't made connection. Let me see what we have. How many committees of safety do we have coming up? I know we have it on the right-hand side of our website. Let's see, committees of safety. Where is that?
Hey, while you look for a quick note, we do have three in the queue, but also what I wanted to say with what Gerard was saying was, the good Lord willing, like Carl Miller would used to talk about, I think he passed away, may he rest in peace. Remember what he said, that he was approached from people in the military. So I'm assuming this is White Hats. And they taught him the common law. So maybe, just maybe, there are people that do know about it.
Well, let's hope so. And again, therein is the purpose of NLA. If enough people step up, we can be the ones to bring it into play and make sure it happens. We have 167 committees of safety in process, okay? And we only have a couple of people that are really putting that together that actually comes to the Monday night meetings. How many of those people are getting an education? You know, if they use our handbooks in order to develop a committee of safety and to do different things. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. You know, if you don't understand the Constitution, you can't understand, you know, at least know it and understand it, of course. If you don't understand it and know the Constitution, how can you know when they're breaking the law? How can you, and how can you do things the right way unless you know how to do things the right way? You know, this isn't something that just comes to you in some kind of a logical fashion. It's something that takes time and over a lifetime to figure a lot of these things out. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And so when we learn, and that's where wisdom comes from, is learning from your own experiences and the experiences of others. And so, you know, again, we have a lot of committees of safety that are in motion, but we don't have enough people making contact with them, you know, helping them along, really marrying them to the education here at National Liberty Alliance, getting them involved, at least coming. You know, I'd love to get one meeting a month, which is part of the plan, one meeting of a month focusing where all of the committee organizers, at least one person from each of the committees of safety, and more is the merrier, of course, 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever, but at least one from every committee of safety from every county coming to a meeting once a month for the sole purpose of discussing one national issue, okay, or maybe two. But at least once a month, we should come together to discuss and focus in on one national issue that we need to put our brains together on, focus, come up with different ideas, throw things back and forth. Maybe we'll have two or three ways to deal with it and to go back to the committees and they make their decision on how they want to approach the problem. But we need to be working on these problems collectively across the nation at the same time. Again, this has all been part of the plan that we have here at National Liberty Alliance. But again, we don't have enough people really focusing in on this. But, you know, to finish addressing the question that we originally started this conversation, you know, and some information on what's going on, here's a video that I have uploaded just this week, The Greatest Show on Earth. Gerard had shared this with me, and then Eric shared it with me, and we're able to find it. It's up, I think it's up on YouTube. No, this is on Rumble. This is a Rumble page. So if anybody hasn't seen this, I'll tell you, it'll make you feel good to see this because it'll give you a lot of faith in the plan. It'll build your faith in the knowledge of knowing that something is being done. I think this video will help you. Also, Operation Restore the Republic, which I put this one up a couple of weeks ago. And there's some other things that I put up a while ago that might be helpful. And this is all found under devolution. Okay, so under today's issues, come down to devolution. And I think I might have put something else. Oh, and by the way, you know, we are having, we decided recently a Bible study that we're going to have it 2 days a week instead of one. So our next Bible study is going to be on Wednesday, and it'll be Thursday. So Wednesday and Thursday nights, we'll be having Bible studies starting at 7:30 to 8:30. Anybody that's interested, I hope more people are interested in coming to that, because that's common law, by the way. But about Bible study, you can get more information on the Education Starts Here. Come down and click on Bible study, and you can get some information. There's already two studies we've had already, so people, you know, can listen in on those. And even if you can't make it, you can listen to this anytime you want. We also have it in audio, and we'll be putting up some PDF study aids as we go on. But anyway, over here under today's issue is devolution, which I said we have some new things up. This is a great video. Also coming down to, we've updated, what's the other thing we updated here? It was QAnon News. Okay, we updated that. I know they came up, I think 61 just came out today or yesterday. I got to get that up there. Terry, if you can keep your eye on that and make sure those get posted, I'd appreciate it. And if not, just let me know and I'll get the time.
I'll try to stay up with it, John. Thank you.
And there's a couple other interviews that were done that you might want to stick up there. Maybe you talk to Gerard. I think he's listened to all of them, and he might tell you the best ones to throw up. I don't think all of them are that great, but a lot, most of them are, really. So, but we do have people in the queue. If anybody else has a final thing to say, we're going to move to the people in the queue. Gerard, Eric, anybody? Final statement before we move over?
No.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear.
Do you want to finish the questions?
No, we'll take the questions in the queue, and if we have time, we'll deal with it, but if not, we'll pick it up next
week. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to go get the chickens in the coop. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take our first person here. It's Marianne. How you doing, Marianne? You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, I'm right here. Yes, I have a question.
You got to get closer to your mic, though.
Okay, sorry. I was wondering if you guys are aware of economic development corporations in each state.
No, I'm not. Gerard, are you aware of that?
I get emails about it all the time. I didn't know if it was a scam or not.
Oh, it's not a scam. I know, for instance...
Can you get a little closer to your mic, though?
For instance, I know the one in... Because I live in Indiana now. And when I was in Illinois, I was kind of sort of seeing stuff in Illinois, but Indiana is so clear. Like, it's so clear. There's this whole process set up. It's basically a takeover at the regional level of our state. I really do believe that they're trying to do a UN bureaucratic takeover of the United States by each state, going through regions and then the county economic development. Because if you look at economic development corporation, there's one for New York City. Like, there's one for major cities, and then they're in each state. And they're usually incorporated. Like, for instance, if I you to the easiest one for me to see so far has been the one in Indiana, and it's Indiana IEDC.IN.gov, and if you go there, they have a foundations site. There's a foundations page, and in the foundations page, it is actually funded by a 501c3. So it's like commerce and economic development, and it's a .gov being funded by a 501c3. So because they're private donors, if you try to FOIA the donor list, they say it's private. So they can't get a donor list. And we know that there are foreign investors in it. And if you look, it's okay. If you look at the brochure for under the foundation, there's a you can click on the brochure, and it has different levels of donor, and they basically have a say in the policy of Indiana.
I don't know much about it. Gerard, do you have any comment on it?
I know. All I know is that they're out there, and they contact you through different things, like if you're on Messenger or whatever, and they're offering you money, free money or interest-free money. I never trusted them. I don't want to give them the information that they want. You know, I didn't realize that they were, you know, they're built into the county.
Well, you know? It's if you go to your go to your county and look up county, whatever your county is, economic development. And I can almost guarantee, like, it's even here in Indiana, and it's also true in Illinois, that there, you'll have like a Cook County economic development. There's a Chicago economic development. There's so many offices, it's ridiculous. And then, but here, because I'm in Indiana, the counties are smaller, so they tend to just have one office for each county. And what they're doing is they're bringing the counties together into regions, and then at the region level, they're creating economic development maps, and they're basically dictating what can be built in certain areas. And they're following the APA, like urban development. I mean, they're right now, there's something called the READI, R-E-A-D-I, and it's Rural Economic Accelerated Development Initiative is happening. And they're taking away the farms. Like, I mean, that's really what it comes down to is they want to get rid of rural areas. Because there's so much money flowing in it, it's foreign investors. It's international.
Well, all of that is going to collapse, though, once we get to the other side of devolution, because, again, that kind of control is, it's destructive to our Constitution, to common law. It's, it's anti. So.
Absolutely destructive. And I've been tracking it here and really kind of freaking out about it because I see...
It sounds like it's part of Agenda 21.
It's totally Agenda 21. And it's, but I think that's part of the reason why they did what they did with our election system.
Also, anything on this kind of a level where it deals with government, deals with, these kind of things in any way, creating regents, and for instance, or whatever, all these things, it's just so unconstitutional, of course. And again, if it's tied into an Agenda 21, it's just unconstitutional. But the other thing is the fact that it's private. When you have private movement doing these kind of things, and it's making major changes ultimately in the government, local government, ultimately, on the way how things are going to work and what's going on, anything that's secret is evil.
Absolutely, and I've warned the local government here about it, and they kind of look at me like I have two heads. But I warned them. I said, if you get involved with this, I mean, this is UN related. It's foreign, and this is what our President Trump is dealing with, and our military.
Yeah, I think this problem is going to. Well, there's no doubt about it. This problem will be solved on the other side of devolution. There's not much we can mount the battle and try to do things, but we're not going to get anything done with it, and in the amount of time we're not going to get it done, and on the other side it's going to be taken care of. The same thing with spending a lot of time focusing in on the problem with voting. Just the fact that we know about it is the main point, because people need to know about it in order to agree with the plan that Trump's got. And he's going to expose all this in the court cases that he's got going on. This is part of the plan of exposure, because he gets a chance to make his pitches, his position, and to show how all the corruption, that's been taking place. I mean, I've been watching videos going back 15, 20 years already that talk about the corruption. I've seen court cases about the corruption, and nothing has ever been done over the years, because it's that big and it's controlled. It's like going up against the IRS if you're going up against the status quo of how things work in voting, as far as the control of the voting. First of all, it seems to me that what they do is they collect all the information from all these machines and bring it up onto a county level, and that's where they do the county counting, is at the county level. It was never meant to be that way, and it never was that way. Counting should be taking place in the election district itself, and then the conclusions of the matter needs to then be sent upline, and I would guess to the counties, and the counties up to the state level eventually, so all the numbers will come up. But that should all be done openly, and it should be done online, where the numbers are coming in, where the people that are putting the numbers up can see, hey, they did get my number right, they didn't add or take away, or whatever the case may be. And again, this is one of the jobs of the Committee of Safety. It's their job to be there to make sure that the election has been done right, and that they confirm and certify, be part of that certification. But they've taken that away too. This is government by consent. The people should be counting that vote, and not that the Committee of Safety in itself should be counted. The people are paid for those positions. People come up and work every year to come in to do that work. They get pretty decent dollars for that. And they get training and everything. But this needs to be done at the election district level. Because, yes, if you bring it all up to a county level, especially, the counties like down in the city, New York City, I mean, that's huge. you know, to try to count those numbers, all those ballots, it would take a huge amount of time. And we've seen that, what was going on in some of these places. And but that's where the corruption, it's easier to control county levels than it would be to control election districts, you know. You know, that's really would be huge to try to control that. They wouldn't be able to. But again, you know, we got to fix it. All right, we got to move on because we got a couple of people left in the queue and it's getting late. You got a final point? Do you have anything else to say on that, Marianne, before we move? Final point?
No, thank you. I just wanted to warn people about it.
Okay, appreciate that. All right, thank you, Marianne. Let's go to our next person. We've got two other people in the queue. We want to try to get both of them in. Ross, it looks like you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
Sorry, my father, Jay's on the TV right now for that. I want to say that, you think this plan will succeed? The community safety plan, because
it'll succeed if people want to take back and have government by consent. If you can't interest enough people to take back government and have government by consent, then it's up to the people. So the people decide. And if the people decide that they no longer want a government by consent, then they're just not going to get active in it. Now, you can, I do think we can get it. Let me mute you while I'm talking. There's a lot of noise in the background. I'll unmute you when I'm done. You know, again, if we can get our message out to enough people, okay, then we can, you know, then get something done. Because, you know, generally speaking, and again, it's just kind of a trying to figure out numbers, but for every million people, maybe we can pull 1,000 people that are serious. Okay, so if that's true, and we need 300,000 people in order to do this, then we need to get our message out to quite a few million people in order to draw that. But I think we'd get more than 1,000 from a million anyway. But in any event, whatever that ratio is, I don't know if anybody has ever looked into that. You know, all organizations, you know, you look at the number of people that are involved in the organization, and there's sort of a ratio when you look at what the number of the membership would be with the actual number of the people that are actually involved. Some people are involved on a very low level, and some people are involved on a very high level. And there's, you know, percentages, ratios that seem to work out. I don't know if anybody knows those ratios, but if we can discover them, it'll give us a little more insight on what we have to do. But we have to hit critical mass in order to really get enough people involved. So it's possible. But on the other hand, end of this thing, who knows, maybe the Lord will be here before we can even get that done. So. All right. Final point, Ross, because I got to go to the next person.
You can go to the next person.
Okay. Thank you, Ross. You know, Ross, what you should do probably is see if you can get a hold of a noise-canceling mic, and that'll probably work a lot better. At least maybe we wouldn't pick up the background noise as bad as we do pick it up. Tim from Oregon, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, you hear me well?
Yep, we got you.
Okay. Okay, we talked about Article 1, Section 8, and Clause 17 the last go-around.
Okay.
And I think probably one of the main points here, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 is the very proof that the government can own much of these lands as they do. The fact that their powers have went out of hand is very critical. But there are two types of land ownership that the government has, and one I will call enclave ownership, the forts, docks, etc., and those pieces of ground, which would also include the territories, and the 10 square of Washington, D.C. Well, the lands out here in the West, as we refer to as BLM lands and Forest Service lands, are not enclaves in any way, shape, or form, and it's just what I will refer to in this deal is common ownership. And that ownership is no different than you or I have out there that the BLM or Forest Service, the federal people have. But enclave ownership, that's what I would call absolute ownership. And if you will read that Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 in there very carefully, it will point out the two different types of power over those lands that they control or own. And one of them is absolute, and that's the enclave powers, enclave ownership, I'll call it. Mm-hmm. And as far as the other grounds, and every piece of property that we live on today, if it's some kind of a private ownership, it all started with this same ownership. And part of it was the common ownership, which come through war powers, letters of marque, or is Wayne Hage's two separate comments he always made about these situations. Yes, they have the powers because they have the guns. And our government has the same powers that all governments have. And if you follow in and delve into that Constitution, you will find that they have these ownerships. Now, I'm not going to say for one second that they have not overstepped their ownership bounds and stuff. I think it's very big. But one of the big things they did way back when to, and they passed this ordinance, the Northwest Ordinance, they passed it twice. Once in the Articles of Confederation and once in the Constitution. That was not necessary. But they made a big issue of that, that the reason they did that is so that when the new government took over, there was no question about the Northwest Ordinance. And that is a list of all the different things that they anticipated out of those new lands. And the main thing is it was going to be dispersed out into the hands of the people. The federal government was not to own very much land. And out here in the western states, the lands that they, the settled lands first, were, of course, were those up the creek bottoms and the good fertile farm grounds and everything, and then the back up on the ridge where they couldn't build a house and there was no place to live, except for a bunch of cows or sheep or, you know, livestock. Well, those grounds were it kind of fouled everything up, but that's the way it was. Anyway,
well, the territories, you know, again, once you get enough people in a territory, and I don't remember what the number is, there is a number, and if those people get together and vote to become a state, then they should be turned on to a state. The Philippines
right.
should have been a state a long time ago. I think I mentioned that in the last conversation. And also, Puerto Rico should have become a state a long time ago. But they don't want that to become a state because they're using that to play a game that they're playing. And the IRS plays a major role in that, the Federal Reserve. But yeah, when you go into Article 1, Section 8, particularly Clause 17, it's very clear. It gives no power or authority for a BLM or any control of any kind of a situation like that. And again, you know, that's something that these lands that are being controlled by the BLM need to be controlled by the state. But they need it is necessary for certain usage, of course, as we I think we agree on that. But go ahead, back to you, Tim.
Well. I you missed my point here. We must understand where that land patents come from. The federal government has all of those.
When you're talking about land patent, are you talking about it from the standpoint of looking at it from individual ownership of property, or are you looking at it from the standpoint of government owned and controlled property?
Well. If you'll look at these BLM lands and Forest Service lands out here, they were not that very inhabitable as far as living on and stuff. And the people come in and homesteaded the valuable land. And then they had to come up with land laws to allow the settlement of the rest of it. And there's various different laws that bring that in. But some of that ground wasn't worth saddling on unless except to turn some cows out on. And most of them, by the time it was some of the laws passed to do that, those lands were already taken up and by grazing and stuff, and that is already taken care of in Curtain versus, I believe it was Benson in 1910 and 1911, and that defined public lands. The only lands that are available to homestead are public lands. And those lands are going to be come out of a patent from if there's any public lands, and you're going to homestead upon them, which that's, you know, history, done pretty well done deal. That land patent is going to come direct from the federal government. And then they aren't going to have no more control over it. But as long as it's not patented lands, the federal government has to be the owners of it. I'm not saying they have not overstepped their bounds,
well,
but
as far
if you read Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, it defines how the law applies over those particular pieces of land, the enclave, the 10 square of D.C., and outside of those lands, that federal government does not have that same authority. And you read that carefully. And I took a lot of years.
Again, I'm not sure whether I understand your point, but let me just see if I do. You know, you focus in on the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and any other needful buildings. But as far as coming together and putting something together to control land, like the BLM controls it, that kind of thing, that shouldn't be a federal agency controlling that. That should be a state agency controlling that. And I think we agree on that, right?
No.
We don't. You think that the federal
government... It's very clear in there.
No,
the federal government already owns it.
No,
they have title to it. You and I don't have one ounce of title.
Hold on. If you're talking about the law that they make it up in the civil law and the legislation in order to create something that's not there, that's one thing. If we're talking about the Constitution, it's not there. It's not there in the Constitution. They don't have that power and authority.
Of course they do. It's right there in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17.
Let me read it again. I'll read the entire thing. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such districts, district not exceeding 10 square miles. So that brings us to the seat of government, as may by cession of particular states and acceptance of Congress become the seat of government of the United States. Okay, so that's one part. The second thing, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent, so they have to purchase it, by the consent of legislature of the state in which the same shall be for, and this is what it's for, the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Has nothing to do with controlling land, for instance, that you might put out to cattle ranchers or for other purposes, water rights and all those things, all that income that would come in for that purpose and that process and all of the benefit of the people that would work on that, this should be all controlled by the states. How can you get the federal government controlling that? It doesn't say that. Now, we have territory that we have to do something with, but the territory, yeah, they have to make law and have a certain amount of control over that until it gets to the point where it could become a state. And that's how the whole United States was created after the colonies. After the 13 colonies, other areas became populated enough and they came in and they wanted to join the Union and create a state. And that's how it worked all the way across this nation. And I don't see any place where once a place becomes a state that the federal government has any power or authority, any constitutional authority at all to have any control over anything other than was defined in Article 1, Section 8, 17.
They still have the title to it, though.
Well, now you're talking about a game that they put together and a game that they're playing. That's a whole different story. Yes, they got the guns, they took the land, they do what they want, and they don't care what you say and what you do, they'll ignore
you. No, you changed what I said. I'm talking about the title to the land.
They don't have the title. Once the state becomes a state, it's the state's land. It's no longer the federal government's land.
No. That's not true at all. I'll tell you what.
Let's pick this up next week if you want, because we're running out of time. We've got two other people in the queue. I got to get out of here in minutes, Gerard. Maybe you can finish the two people in the queue. I'll stick around for a couple more minutes, and I got to get out of here. But let's talk some more on this, Tim. I want to hear more of your point on this and how you get there. I'd like to understand that, okay?
Be in mind, I might not be here next week, but well, I'd like
to. We'll do it the week after then, whenever you come. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay.
I'm good with that. Gerard, you want to take the last two callers here?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, it's already after time. Okay. Next question, TJ. Go ahead. You are up.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, listen. I would like to get some consultation. I'm in the midst of a they're calling for a summons for dismissal or a hearing. And I feel really good about my odds. I feel really good about everything as far as subject matter jurisdiction. But I've got questions on approaching these final days. I got another month before I have to do anything. So how can I get consultation? Is there a phone number I can call?
Well, you'd have to talk to John, and he's hard to get a hold of, so I don't want to speak for him with that. What does this pertain to?
A mortgage foreclosure.
Okay.
I got a hold of the books that John sent out, and I really got a good case. I feel really good about it. It's just getting them to just dismiss the case.
Right.
And stuff. And so as far as subject matter, I feel really good about it. My question is, I think they're kind of dealing with jurisdiction personam, and I'm wondering, would it be wise to do a conditional acceptance concerning that?
You know, that's tough. I don't know that you want to give them anything. In other words, jurisdiction when they summons you and you accept the summons. They already have it.
Well, not really, because I said I never gave it. I'm contesting that point. I said you never had my permission.
Well, I'll tell you right now, they're not doing anything according to the law. I don't know if John's still here, but he'll tell you they do exactly whatever the hell they want to do. That's the problem.
Well, if I do the conditional acceptance, I believe it gives me some balls, some teeth.
Yeah, even in a couple minutes. Yeah. Okay, just real quick, I don't have time to talk about this right now, but if you catch me early on a Monday, you know, one of these Monday meetings, today was a bad day because we lost a lot of problems trying to connect. But in any event, we could talk maybe next week if you want, I'd like to do it on in the open so other people can hear. Maybe I get maybe 10 minutes worth of ideas and thoughts for you on that.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you, John.
Get in the queue early, that's all.
I will.
I'm on my way out of here. Gerard, you got one other person in the queue.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I'm going to go ahead to Brent. Go ahead, Brent. What do you got?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if attorneys can be sued, and if so, what could they be sued for?
Well, they may think they're immune. I don't think they're immune. You can sue attorneys. John has sued them. Sued them all. When they took him to court, he sued everybody. The attorneys, everybody. So I don't, you know, and then, you know, depending on what it is, I mean, you could look at his case that he brought with the IRS, the one where they gave him a letter of apology and release of lien. On that one, he sued everybody, including the attorney. So they're not immune, really, you know.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that case is up on, I don't want to misspeak, but I think he's got some of it up on the, you know, the cases that we that are put up on the Supreme Court cases. But you can ask him about that next week. Anyway, I know that he sued attorneys and even IRS agents, so.
Okay. For the sake of time, I'll continue this next week.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
So, thank you.
You're welcome. So, with that, I'm going to close. Good meeting. Thank you, everybody, for your participation, and we'll see you here next week. God bless. Don't forget to pray for the nation and keep your powder dry. Okay. Have a good night.